to the Local Bar Podcast with your host, Chad Alexander. Come on in. We have a lot of friends we want you to meet.
Well, hello there. From the cozy confines of the studios here in downtown Columbia, South Carolina, located somewhere just west of the river, this is the Local Bar Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Alexander, and of all the places you could be, you've decided to spend a few moments with us today. For that, we are incredibly grateful and thankful. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Wanted to take the week off. I had a lot going on, a lot to focus on with family, and thought, I was like, the last week's show was so good. Thankful for Neely and what she did. It is now the largest show we've ever had downloaded. So, of course, what do? After you have a record-breaking show, take a week off. Why not? You got to relax the muscles and everything. But then I got to spend quite a bit of time with myself over the weekend. I forgot how much I don't like that sometimes. And so I wanted to do a really quick show tonight based upon the holiday that you have all forgotten about, especially if you are in corporate America. Yes, unless you care a lot about the Cowboys and Detroit Lions and whoever plays them on Thanksgiving, or you've got those family members that you're just dying to see, you really kind of just skip right over Thanksgiving. All of you do. It is now gone. This used to be a joke. Like I used to sit around and say, oh my God, you people, you go straight from Halloween to freaking Christmas. I just saw them take down Halloween decorations and there's already Christmas stuff up. That happens now. Halloween starts the moment the first leaf turns its color, Halloween stuff starts. And then Christmas goes. And I understand a lot of people are just crazy about Halloween. I mean, it is kind of fun, but I mean, every kid loves it. Everybody in there, somewhere in their 20s, still loves getting dressed up, you know, just like in the movie Mean Girls. It gives girls a chance to dress like sluts for one night. You know, I've got some good friends early into it. Will McNamara, that's been on the show before, nuts about Halloween every year. I get it. Some of your friends get a chance to get together, hand out candy. We actually have a very good time with Halloween. But still, people go nuts over it. And everybody's obviously nuts about the Christmas season. Doesn't matter what your religion is. Hell, you love it. You love that season. It's the 3 weeks of the year, I think. Advent is the 4 weeks of the year. We all like each other, you know? And then we go back to you know, Hillary should have beaten Trump and everybody's racist and everything's awful. I get that, but it always chides my craw a little bit that we skip right over Thanksgiving. And so I wanted just to take a quick moment tonight because there's something I want to share with you and a little project I'm going to ask you to take part in. Now, it's nothing that you have to send in any homework. If you'd like to, I'd love to share it with people if you want me to, but it's going to be a long time before we're able to do this, so just bear with me. If you can and want to participate, I'd appreciate it. But I want to tell you about something that I'm doing. So a long time ago, you know, I always loved Thanksgiving. I always got to see both of my sets of grandparents. They lived about 45 minutes away from each other, and we would take the time to drive to one for lunch and the other one for dinner. And you want to know where the weight is that I wear on this body comes from? It comes from Thanksgiving every single year, because we got to go to see all of our family. We got to eat twice, and both my grandmothers could cook like you would not believe. So I had no shot. The weight was going to catch up to me eventually. When I was actually in my high school years, though, my mom, if you've heard us the episode with my mom's a school teacher, but she also started this really cool thing. She started making her own hair bows for church, like to sell at church yard sales to raise money. And ended up doing a bunch of craft shows, and then, you know, basically having a factory up in Boone now, and it's crazy how the whole bow business has taken off. If you ever get a chance, listen to that episode. It's a really good one. But she went through this phase, though, where we were like basically gypsies, okay? They're like 12 shows a year, I want to say, where we would go and we'd pack up this minivan and we'd take these hundreds of thousands of bows down to some convention center, set up a booth, and then my mom would sit there and sell her bows. And then I would always go for whoever needed help loading in and loading out, because a lot of them didn't have sons with them. So I'd make some really good money helping people carry all their stuff in. And then every now and then I'd work for one of the vendors. It's actually where I really started honing my craft of being a salesperson. And I really loved it. And Aunt Janice and Uncle Bob ran the shows. Their boy Rusty, who's one of my best friends growing up. We all were family. But I was, you know, all these minivans and RVs would pull in, and you'd have this band of gypsies, all of us crafters, you know, going and spending certain weekends each fall with each other. And then Thanksgiving would come. And with Black Friday, obviously, Thanksgiving was the biggest show of the year for everybody. And it was held down in Jacksonville. So that's about a 4-hour drive from here. But when I lived in the upstate, you're talking more 5-hour drive, and maybe even further than that. And we'd go down to Jacksonville and we'd all set up and we'd have Thanksgiving. Then Black Friday would come and we'd all be working our tails off. You would hope to goodness you had enough inventory to get you through the weekend, because the people that run the shows don't like for you to run out of stuff, you know. You got to be there for Saturday and Sunday. And every now and then I saw people just not realize they were going to be the pick of the show. And Friday, they were out of material. And so they're running around town begging people to open up stores so they could create whatever their craft was. But anyway, that did cause my family to not be together on Thanksgiving. And I always really liked Thanksgiving. It's been well documented on this show. What I thought of my grandparents and how they were, all four of them were giants to me. They're four incredibly important pillars in my life. So I did have one grandfather, though, that would call me on every Thanksgiving. It's my grandfather, Bud. He would always call me, and if he couldn't reach me, if I was going to be somewhere where he couldn't call me, because, you know, this is before I had cell phones, then I was supposed to call him. He'd find out what hotel we were staying in, and he would call me. I don't know if my parents even know this, but we always talked every Thanksgiving. It was important to him that we did. And Bud didn't go to like the family Thanksgiving. So he wanted to make sure he and I talked. And I don't know if he did it with the other grandkids or not, but it was always just a quick conversation, and it was always a very good one, usually pretty funny. And then we'd go about our ways. And Thanksgiving was always, you know, that was always a part of Thanksgiving for me. But I, you know, when we're on the road, I had to learn to make my own tradition, because half the family wasn't there. And then a lot of times mom would be so busy and I'd be so busy helping people set up, she'd have to go eat with this other group of people. And then I'd have to, you know, fend for myself and find my own Thanksgiving. And one of the times I was walking in the parking lot, came across an RV where a ton of people had gotten together. You know, it looked like the original Thanksgiving, the one we were all told, you know, the story. Y'all know the story is not true, right? But Pilgrims, I don't know if anybody knows that or not. But anyway, what we were taught about Pilgrims and Indians sitting down, or Native Americans sitting down at tables and sharing food together, it looked like that, just people in RVs and a little bit more redneck, you know? But it was great. It was great. And it was the people that I had history with, that a lot of them had kids my age, and I'm hanging out with them. And, you know, Thanksgiving became something really, really kind of cool. I always loved going to Jacksonville, though, because it was so different from anything that I grew up with in South Carolina. The people were very different because they're Floridians. You know, Florida is not a southern state, is a Spanish-speaking country, and the people that live in northern Florida are some of my favorite folks. But it's just it's a strange mixture of southern Georgia and northern Cuba. I mean, it's really neat, and I love it. But such a different vibe there. So I would, you know, because of the way it was, I'd spent a lot of time by myself during Thanksgiving. And I haven't done that in a while. Not to that extent, or not really like on purpose. But I really haven't. And I realized something this weekend that, you know, I talk a lot about that self-reflection and making sure you're very aware of who you are and what's going on. That I realized that I think in a lot of ways when I'm saying that out loud on this show, that I'm not hearing it inside my own head. And this weekend kind of made that kind of apparent to me. Before I get to that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's been going on at my job. So I've been at this job now since June. So we're going into my 6 month here. And, you know, I was brought in to work marketing with a company. And it's a segment of the world that I have been working in now for 17 years. It's a segment of that world that I have never directly been involved with. I have always been on the outside utilizing this type of healthcare service, but never been inside the walls and how it looks. So because of a mentor of mine that I had that really helped me develop as a marketer, but really more of a leadership role of someone that really knows how to game plan and work with other people. The guy that really kind of helped me hone my skills for that taught me something that I really enjoy utilizing, and I tell it to people all the time as well. Except I don't tell that he told me. I take your credit, Jimmy. I'm sorry, but the great Jimmy Williamson, a guy that I would love to have on the show one day. I don't know if he'll ever be on or not. Was someone that. Probably the person I respected the most and had one of the closest ties with at a company that I worked with. And he and I spent an hour together each week, no matter what we did, we at least spent an hour together of full-on, extremely focused coaching. And I loved it. I loved it. And one of the things he told me is when he would go into a new school, so he worked in higher education, one of the things that he would do is he would come in and he would say, okay, I'm going to spend a year and I'm going to watch and observe and I'm going to listen. And you know, he's going to take part, but he wasn't going to make any big, huge, sweeping changes unless something was hemorrhaging until at least a year went by. And he talked about the pros and cons of that where, you know, that could be a show all in and of itself. It's a wonderful philosophy. But I kind of have taken that into this role because I've worked with it. I understand a good bit of it, but there's a lot about it that I haven't seen from inside the walls. So I knew that I may not understand that culture completely. So I wanted to do that. Obviously, I'm in marketing and sales. You can't wait a year. But I wanted us to have results very quickly. But I said, I'm not going to really speak up and say we need to make changes until I've really spent 6 months watching, observing, listening, picking it all up. Once I do that, then I'll look at making my suggestions, talking about what I think needs to be done, pushing people gently in the direction that I think it needs to go. I don't know how I've gotten through the fifth month. I'm very shocked, and I'm not surprised at the results they've had in the past. And now when I see what's going on, I see them, what they don't understand that they're doing, I see them constantly making the same mistakes even when they change. Even when they make a change, they think that they've done something, and they haven't. They're just doing the same thing over again. And what I find interesting about them, when I'm watching the higher-up people that I work with, one of the things that I am so incredibly surprised at is that all of them talk. And none of them listen. None of them. I mean, I'm not saying anything I wouldn't say to them. If they're listening to the show, good. I hope they get it. You know, they don't. And you know, there's one branch that I think wants it to be all their idea. So they don't really want to listen to somebody else. There's another branch that I think has always worked with brand new people, or so it seems, or at least younger people. So it's always an instructor role, but they're not grabbing the feedback to see, you know, the benchmarks of how we're coming along and where we're checking. And then everybody's got this idea about how to do this one part that I'm directly involved with. And every other, it's about a month and a half to 2 months, someone comes in with a new system, quote unquote system, that doesn't take into effect what the last system was. I mean, nobody ever has come in and says, well, what are you doing? You know, it's like, well, what's the plan? Okay, all right, let me tell you what we've been doing. Okay, well, let me show you how to do this. All right, so you understand this is where we are. Can you build off this, or are you saying scrap it? Well, let me just show you what we do. No, I need to know, because we have a foundation here. Do we scrap this foundation, or do we continue with it? Like, what are you accounting for all the things? Yeah, but this is how I've done it in this other place. That's great. Do you know what all we're doing here? And I've asked some very simple questions over the past 2 weeks. Hey, who's going over that? Hey, what do we do when this part comes up? Hey, it sounds like this isn't being done. What happens here? And the answers are always like, they're flabbergasted. They're like, well, I don't know. So what are you doing? Oh, no. I'm riding your train. you could use me as the scapegoat a couple of times, but what we've done is we all want to meddle in something without talking to each other. And then we want to have meetings about putting our plan together. And it's like, look, it's not this hard. What you have to do is look, see where your foundation is. Is it good? Or do you need to scrap and start all over again? Great. So you know what your foundation is. You know what you're working with. Where are you trying to get to? And what all do you have to have underneath your control? When you can very clearly answer those three and draw very clear lines to those three, then you can do it. But the problem is everybody really loves, like, you know, I go out and I talk to people all the time. Oh, great, I'm going to go out and do all this. Or you can do that, but the person inside is now confused because you're telling them to follow up, and that's generally what you do out there. And then I walk into a stack of files that aren't complete, and I'm... What have you people been doing? And the poor girl, we're trying to get caught up into, it's just a, you know, it's not a mess. We're doing well. They're very smart people, very capable people. But it doesn't matter how smart you are, how good you are, how talented you are. If you're not really listening, then you don't know what you're working with. The other thing is, like, I wonder if they listen to themselves. I'm bad at this sometimes. And this is kind of what got to me this week. It's easy to describe in the business world. Hey, you've told me that story 15 times. I get it. I understand that. I'm with you. I need to know this, though. I get it. Don't tell me that story again. Just please. Do you not hear that you've told me the story 15 minutes? If I need to hear the story again, I get it. But, man, you've told me this 5 times. You've been here for 3 weeks. Come on. Let's move the ball down the field. Are we moving the ball down the field? I get that. We all probably fall prey to that at some point, especially when you work in a very fast-paced environment. But there's also the times when, I don't know if you ever do this, but while I'm talking to someone, if it is in a very instructive way and there's not much communication coming back the other way, I take whatever that gear is that normally listens, and I make it listen to myself. And sometimes I'm so shocked. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? What? You've been droning on about this for 5 minutes, and I know a lot of you are thinking, well, why the hell don't you do it on this show? Yeah, this show is part of an exercise to help me fix that, okay? So just give me a little bit of credit there. But it is very strange. It's one of those things when you really listen to yourself, you can be very critical, and which is another problem that I had, and I've had a therapist tell me that before, that I can be my own worst enemy, and I really have to watch that. But I do think it's a good thing to have. I do think it's a very good thing, very good aspect to have, where you're actually listening and being very aware of what you're saying and what you're doing. I think that is something we should do this weekend every year. I mean, look, you get off work Thursday. You probably get Friday off too. You get a 4-day weekend for this holiday. You don't for Halloween. And arguably, a lot of you don't get that for Christmas. 4 days every year, you know, you can get Thanksgiving. So you know what that means? You can find some time to yourself, can't you? I was thinking about things the other day, and I was thinking about how lucky I've been over the past few years. You know, when I was married the first time, there were a lot of days I felt like I really couldn't be myself. And I'm not one that wishes for the college days all over again. I had a great time when I was in college. I don't want to go back to that. I've never wished to go back to that. But I had great friends. It was a great time. But I'm hard pressed to ever want to go back to where I was. But I've noticed myself doing something since I turned the ripe old age of 40 back in June is I've suddenly started comparing myself to who I used to be at different times. And that has proven over the past 5 months to be very dangerous. So much so that one afternoon before I came home from work, I found myself sitting in the car and I was out of my mind. I was like numb. I don't know if it was like a breakdown or anything. I don't think it was anything like that, but it was, I don't know. I kind of just lost it a little bit. I mean, not really. I'm not sitting in my crying and going nuts, but, it was very strange. And I quickly started like doing whatever exercise I could to kind of bring myself back. Right. And, one of them was, what do you want to be? You know, when I started my life over again 4 years ago, when I stepped out and I said, you know, yeah, I got a gorgeous, wonderful daughter, and everybody thinks family life is great. It's surprise, it's not. It's generally what happens when you go through divorces. There's a lot that you don't know. And I stepped out and just said, I've got to do this work. I've got to do this work. I've got to get back to who I really want to be. There's a path that I am not on. And in a lot of ways, I found it. I've definitely been very lucky to find Maria in this. And I know I've already see half of you rolling your eyes. Just bear with me for a second. I was very lucky to have her, not only because of how much fun she is, but how supportive she is and how great of a direction she gives me. Because there's a lot you got to understand. I sound, through these airwaves, I really sound like I have it together. And I do compared to where I used to be. But like I've had people ask me to do like coaching with them, like life coaching with them. And it's almost like, yeah. Yeah, for how long? You know, because it's only going to be so long before you find out enough about me that you can easily wander into the shit show side of me. You really can. And it's one thing that I still have to battle. One of the other things I'll tell you this, years ago, I used to have an awful temper, like awful. A lot of you know this. If you've grown up with me, you, I did this awful temper and, yeah, I went to somebody about it. I didn't go like the anger management. That wasn't going to work for me. But like expressed things that I was carrying with me, opened up some old wounds that I didn't even think were really there. This is all part of when I was going through my divorce, a little bit before my divorce though, is when it started. And man, it's amazing how much better that's been. Because one of the things I found is that I would just misdirect that anger towards something else, or something would be causing, I couldn't figure out why I was so angry, and I would just bottle up, and then one thing would happen, and I would just unleash it all, because it made me feel better in the moment, and it probably cost me that friend, you know? Yeah, I've had that happen, and it's just, I mean, I know we all have, but it was I saw it enough as a problem that I wanted to get that checked out. I think that we all have stuff that we have to be very careful of. And, you know, the direction that I get from Maria helps me keep everything in between the lines. I really enjoy who I am when I'm with her. And it's not that I have her around because she makes me feel better, but she does. I mean, she does. It's a wonderful benefit to what I have with her. She kicks me in the butt when I need it. She kicks me pretty hard. But she is a wonderful support system, and it's very nice to have that. It's also very nice because I know I can do that with her as well. And the little bit that she allows me to do, like we're both old and we have a lot of battle scars, and we understand that this takes time. While it looks like we're just madly in love from the beginning, and a lot of that is true, there is a lot that we have to be patient with, and we both understand that. And it's really nice to have. I'm very lucky with some of the friends that I've got. I'm very lucky to be back playing music again. The guys from the Cock and Bull that I started that band with, or I didn't start that band, but I started playing again with after about a 13-year hiatus, was wonderful. And then to be able to play with Don, first-class badass Merkel, and his fellas that are really damn good musicians, and the chance to be able to play with them is wonderful. But I'm going to tell you, we had a gig on Friday, and I screwed the pooch on that thing, man. I was not my best, but part of that was probably I let the drinks get ahead of me a little bit. I guess the beer's a little heavier in Asheville. I don't know what it is, but man, I lost it. And there's this thing when I'm just looking at the keyboard and the keys all just become a mess, and I start to get in my own head and I can hear it and feel it. And then I try to make up for it in other ways. It just doesn't work. And it was just an awful tumbling down the stairs. And felt awful about that. But more on that in a minute. But, you know, I'm very lucky to have, you know, that opportunity to play and make some great music with some great guys, but to have a lot of fun with that. And that's a really cool thing. Very, very thankful to have the music back in my life again, because it was something that was such a big part of me that I didn't have. And I went for over a decade without, and for the wrong reasons, you know? And I'm really so blessed to have that, to have my girls, you know, to be able to hang out with both of them and, you know, to enjoy who they are individually. And then like this weekend, who they are together. It's just so amazing. It's such a great journey. And it's not always sunshine and rainbows. They're two girls, man. There are a lot of tears and there's a lot of attitude and sass, but you know, I love it. And it's fantastic. And it's so much better than having boys. And then, you know, I work in healthcare, and I see people that aren't healthy. You know, I'm lucky. I've got a mother-in-law that is battling cancer, and that's a very tough thing, and it affects everybody, but it affects her the most, and it's really, really tough. But I'm so thankful because I see people every day because of my job that wish they could be her, and I realize that I'm lucky for that. That I'm lucky with where we are. I'm lucky with where I am with my family, and that I have the people in my life that I have, and that I'm not like some of my other friends. Most notably lately, my buddy Joseph down there in Charleston, Mr. Shut Up Szymanski, the recent loss of his father. It's really tough. Or another buddy of mine who has a friend that is missing. They haven't been able to find for over a month now, and who I think about. And, you know, I think it's really nice to be where I am, but we say that, don't we? We say how thankful we are. It reminds me, if you ever listened to the show that I did with my dad 2 years ago at Christmas, one of the best shows, one of the most talked about shows I ever get. When people send emails that most of the time they'll reference that show. And if you didn't listen, my dad's a preacher. No, it wasn't some holy roller show, but I did ask my dad some very poignant questions about what it's like to be a preacher during Christmas. And one of the most infamous lines from that show is, I said, "Dad, what's the most annoying thing about Christmas, about being a preacher?" He said, "Listening to everybody talk about how much they love everybody else when they're just saying that. And then right after Christmas, they're going to go back to treating people like crap again." I'm paraphrasing here, but, and he's right. But I think we do this at Thanksgiving. Like we say, we're so thankful. Like we're so thankful. Yeah. I'm thankful, but am I showing how thankful I am? Like I talk about my health, right? I talk about how happy I am that I have my health, but I'm over 40 now. My blood pressure is up a little bit high because I work in very stressful jobs. I know that's part of it. The other part of it is the way I eat, the way I take care of myself. I'm not running like I used to. My knee injury is now over. I have got no excuse not to get my butt up and run, but I don't do it. So am I really being the best? Am I really showing how thankful I am? Am I thankful for how lucky I am that I haven't had a freaking heart attack yet? Because I'm going to tell you, if I keep going the way that I am now, seriously, with like the way I've been probably over the past year and a half, where I'm really not watching out for what I do, that heart attack's coming in the next 15 years. You know? Yeah, like I know it's obvious, right? I can talk about how much it means to me that I have my daughters, and I do love them very much, and I do enjoy my time with them. But it's just like tonight, you know, Bryn's gone home, Sterling's going to bed, and the first thing that I do is like, man, so where did I miss out on time with them this weekend? Where did I not do right? And I'm constantly judging myself, and the reason why I am is because I always have an answer to that. Now, I know that there are you parents out there that will tell me you will always do that, and I get that. But some of it could have changed a little bit. Some of it could have been more attentive. There could have been something that's a little bit better. I'm lucky to play with the bands that I play with. I'm lucky to have the guys and to be able to share my enjoyment of music and everything like that. My buddy Michael in the other band, he and I have talked now for a year about writing music. We haven't done it. So how thankful am I to this band? Yeah, I bring something to it in order of playing other people's songs. But am I really putting forth the effort? And then with Don's band, I am a very blessed man to be one of the blacksmiths in Don Merkel and the Blacksmiths. Like I am so incredibly lucky for that. And then I go up there on Friday and am the least prepared out of everybody, and it showed. And then I was awful, and that was a big show. And I let not only Don down but the other guys. And you know what? So here's what killed me about that. I'm driving back. And I'm thinking about the show, and I'm thinking about why I'm so upset with myself musically. And I thought back a long time ago, back when I would play all the time, back when I thought I was king of the freaking piano. I wouldn't have taken on Jerry Lee Lewis and probably not Billy Joel, but I would have gone face to face with Elton John. Like there was a time period. So my ego was way way high, but I'm not talking about writing songs. Okay, I'm just talking about playing. That I felt like I was an absolutely, I'm going to use the G word that I actually hate when I hear people use it, but I felt like I was a gifted player. There was something that was there. And I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, I know it's been 13 years since I've really played, but I've been doing this now for about a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years. So a year and a half. So where is that? Like, where is that talent again? Like, where is that thing that was there? And then I started realizing a couple of things. I played all the time, like all the time. I just wanted to perform, and I wanted to perform. Like I wanted people to notice I was playing. I was looking for every angle, everything to move something forward. Not because I wanted people sitting around saying, "Oh my God, it's Chad Alexander." I mean, there's a little bit of that. Don't get me wrong, but it was more because I wanted people to absolutely enjoy music the way when someone sneaks up on me and surprises the crap out of me. That's what I want. Like, that's the reason why I love live music. It sometimes will surprise the hell out of you. And so, yeah, so am I practicing as much as I used to? No, obviously not. Can I do that? I've got to. Because you know what? I'm not really going to enjoy all this unless I can at least be that guy that I used to be when I played. If not even better, because I should be, because I'm older, because there are things that I understand and things I'm more aware of than I ever was at that age. And it's embarrassing to me in my own mind. I told somebody one time that the song lyric that sticks out to me, I actually was going to have a friend of mine, she's been on the show before, out in Arizona, have a make a sign for me. About, because she makes these really cool wooden signs, and I wanted it to be the lyric that I don't want to say I'm fearful of, but it always stuck out to me. It's at the end of Piano Man where it says, "And they sit at the bar and put bread in my jar and say, man, what are you doing here?" Because I liked it when I was younger, because people would say, you know, exactly what that line meant. Hey, what are you doing here, man? You should be out playing somewhere else. You should be playing somewhere bigger, whatever, blah, blah, blah. These people knew nothing about it. I was just smoke and mirrors, man. Oh, did I not say her name? Susan Leonard. Susan Leonard is the one. Sorry, I just realized I didn't say her name. Susan Leonard made these signs for her. I don't know if she still does it or not. I wanted that because one of the things that in the back of my mind always scared me about it was I never wanted to be the guy playing and people would come up and just, you know, put some money in my jar because they were showing me a little bit of pity and saying, man, what are you doing here? They couldn't find anybody better. And there was always a driving force behind that. And for the first time in my life, I felt that on Friday night. Like I really did. Like I felt like, man, what are they doing with him in the band? And as a guy that loves to be the center of attention while you're enjoying the music, that bothered me. And it sounds very egotistical, and I don't mean it in that way. What I mean by it is that shows me I'm not carrying my weight. That's not living up to. So how thankful am I? How thankful can I really say I am if I'm not doing that? I talk about being, you know, in this relationship with Maria, about having this wonderful relationship with her. And, you know, yeah, I do a lot around the house and stuff, but am I really doing the absolute best I can? Am I really as patient as I need to be? Do I really put my own feelings aside when major things happen the way that I should? I can pat myself on the back on some things, but then, you know, and I can also be very extremely self-critical in other areas. Sure. But in that middle ground, when you get over the emotional decisions that kind of try to guide you one way or another, there's some truth in there. And the truth is that I'm not. And I've got to make sure that I'm doing it. Because here's the thing. It's not what you say. It's what you do. I'm thankful. Are you really? Like, you know, think about anything that you have. I'm thankful that I've got a nice car. Really, do you keep it up? Do you wash it? You keep the oil changed like you're supposed to. You're great. You be thankful you have that car. You don't take care of it, you're not going to have it. I'm thankful I have a nice home. Are you doing the things around the house that you need to order to keep it that way? Same thing with the health. Thankful that I have my health. Great. You might look fantastic. You may be pretty on the outside, but are you ugly on the inside because of what you're putting in your body? I don't know. It's very easy for us to do this. When we talk about being thankful and appreciating what we've been given or what we've worked for and earned, there is something where we've got to look at, are we really putting our best foot forward in each of those areas and making the most of what we've been given? That's really what it is. So here's what I want you to do. See, I don't do New Year's resolutions. Because there's such a stigma about that you're almost supposed to break them, you know? That, and who wants to make major changes when it's cold? I just want to warm up, you know? I started doing something years ago because I heard Emmett Smith used to do this. And I would actually make New Year's resolutions in June. And I would make resolutions for what I would want to do over the next year, the next 2 years, next 5 years is generally what I would do. I didn't do that this year. I think I just really wanted to make sure that I was going to live to see 40. But I'm at Thanksgiving now, and it's very apparent for me. So I want you to do something for me. I've listed my things, my family, my health. I could throw my job in there. My family, my health. Yeah, we'll throw my job in there. And my music. Those are four things that I'm going to focus on greatly over the next year. Now, obviously, family, I always focus on my family. I mean, really focus. I mean, above and beyond. Don't just, yeah, I'm going to go run every other day. No, I mean, like, hyper-focus on four things. Four things. And here's why I want to do it, because I've done this before in my life, and I was so surprised a year later at the difference. I was surprised 3 months later, but I was really surprised when I really kept pushing, and a year later, I couldn't believe where I was. The problem was is when I started my life over again, I was thankful. And then because I didn't appreciate it enough, I didn't keep it up enough. And then I found myself in a hole in two major areas that I was focusing on. So I want to ask you to do this. Thanksgiving next year on the local bar, I'll remind you a month before Thanksgiving comes up. I want you to write down four things, up to four things. Don't go over four. But I want you to go up to four things that you are going to hyper-focus on that really mean that much to you, that are important, that aren't going to take away from anything else. Like, I almost have to throw my job in there because, man, I'll forget my job. And I don't just mean my job. I mean what Chad does to bring in money. Okay, there are things and there are ideas. There are portions of what you are listening to right now that I need to start keying in on and bringing in that I can make money with. There's obviously stuff with music, and I've already explained that, and stuff with my family, and then my health. And I don't want to just say it. Like I want to really push myself to do it, because no one means as much in your life as you do, as far as what can affect you. No one can push harder for you. There is no one that can be your bigger champion than yourself. We talk about this with addicts all the time, that it doesn't matter how much help you try to give them, unless they can help themselves, unless they want to accept that help, then it's not going to do any good. That's the same thing here. You are the person that can be that hero that you need. So I want you to do that for me. Nah, shit. I want you to do it for yourself. I want you to do the exercise for me. And I want you to send me your stories next year before we go into Thanksgiving. If you don't want me to share them online, I won't. And I'll just talk about things in general. But if you do, I would appreciate if you would. I've spoken mine out to the internet as a challenge to hold myself accountable for that, but also hopefully as a guide somewhere. I'm lucky to have these people in my life. I really am. I am very lucky. I'm extremely lucky to have a wife in Maria, to have daughters in Bryn and Sterling, to have a friend in Don, and don't tell him I said that, to have friends like in Michael and David and West and those guys. To have people like Tommy that I work with things at work and figure things out. I'm very lucky to have these people in my life. So I'm thankful for it. So am I doing the best thing I can for them? I hope so. But screw hoping. If I'm really thankful for it, then I'll make what they've given me even better. And that's how I'll say thank you. That's how I'll say that I'm thankful.
If I could fight like you and be a champion, I could hang my hat, darling, out in the hallway. If I could fight like you, I could do anything, and I could walk away like a machine. If I could walk away and I could make you smile, I got something to say, I've been drinking a long, long while. Well, I'm not a killer, but I'll kill for you. Well, I'm not an angry man, but I know the world and we can talk about it. If I could fight like you, I'd be a champion. I could hang my hat, darling, out in the hallway. If I could fight like you, I could do anything, and I could walk away like a machine, like a machine, like a machine, like a machine.